B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper! So, looking at this, that Tom Curran column, the Patriots in their quarterback position. So it feels like it's going to be Jared Stidham as the starting quarterback. At least that's what I've convinced myself going into 2020. But they do still have Brian Hoyer on the roster. And you read this thing, Chris, and your back goes up a little bit. And it feels like, I don't know, some of the terminology that's used from an informed column here from Tom Curran, that you feel it's like, well, Belichick and McDaniels, they feel like they could win with Brian Hoyer or really any bum quarterback.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I go back to Kyle Orton. You know, that was Josh's quarterback in 2009. In Denver, after he sort of bungled the whole
Jay Cutler thing.
Yeah, you know, McJaygate, as they call it out there in Denver. And look, Orton played pretty well. Josh coached him up. He did a good job. He was actually 8-7.
Beat the Pats that hell overtime game.
Yeah, that's right, in 2009. Oh, and the Broncos wore those
terrible AFL uniforms.
Oh, those were so bad. Remember they had the vertical stripes on the socks?
The brown and yellow poop uniforms.
I remember. I actually covered that game. I was at that game, and Josh ran a one corner of the stadium, and he was so excited. He had a great game plan that day, too. I mean, he is a really good coach. But, yeah, I mean, I'm afraid that they feel like they can get by with, like, a Kyle Orton caliber of quarterback, and I just think that's misreading the situation. I do. And what was interesting to me about this piece by Tom, which I think was very good, and he's very well-sourced, was just when you get to that part – talking about, you know, Belichick saying we've done it before and saying that the organization has complete confidence in its ability to win football games with competent quarterbacks. That's Tom Curran speaking. And it has complete confidence it can create competency if the tools are present. That scares me because it basically says that they feel like there's a wide range of quarterbacks that they can win with. And to me, that would include the Kyle Orton, Brian Hoyer caliber of quarterback. And I just think that's a miscalculation.
It is.
And the other thing about this that's interesting to me is, you know, Tom has a line here. That's why all this talk about Andy Dalton, Cam Newton, or Aaron Rodgers has been so much blissfully ignorant, hot air, belch into the no sports void. It's interesting that those three quarterbacks would be grouped together because, to me, those are all different tiers of quarterbacks. You know, Aaron Rodgers is in the Brady elite tier.
Mm-hmm.
Cam Newton is in the proven, has won an MVP tier. Andy Dalton is in the, like, proven, solid to mediocre starter tier. And then there's a tier below that. So they're basically saying we feel like we can win with a tier below Andy Dalton.
And I don't believe that. I mean, if that was true, then, you know, they would have felt confident with, like, a Ryan Mallett type. And Ryan Mallett blows. And for them to feel that way about Brian Hoyer is just—it's just wrong. I'm sorry, and this is one of the things I disagree with vehemently with Felger. Is like he feels they could win 10 games.
Oh yeah, he feels they win the division.
And I think, you know, I have numbers to back it up. That's just not true. Oh, you don't believe in the coaching then? No, I just know that Brian Hoyer blows. That's all. That's really what it comes down to. And I'm not even going to use that 5 turnover playoff game when he was with the Houston Texans some years ago in the loss to Kansas City as the example. By the way, in that same year, Brian Hoyer lost his job to. Oh, who was it again? Ryan Mallett. He blows. But how about this? Suck on this for stats with Brian Hoyer and why you couldn't win with him. I don't care if it's Bill Belichick and you make a Frankenstein coaching monster of him, Halas, Lombardi. Like, you're not going to win.
Walsh.
Yeah. Rah, must coach game. Perfect game plan.
Is this Frankenstein coach friends with the Count?
I hate you so much for bringing that up. Last 16 starts, dating back to November 29th, 2015. Brian Hoyer's record as a starter. Do you want to guess it? Do you know what it is, Chris?
I have no idea. Go ahead.
3-13.
Are you serious?
3-13. His last start. Last season against the Dolphins, a 16-12 loss to the Dolphins. He threw 3 picks. He blows. So again, I don't care if you have the Frankenstein coaching monster. Parcells, Belichick, Halas, Walsh, rah!
must get game plan. I don't know why I'm doing this. I'm just
I don't
bored.
Know why you're doing yeah. this either, but it's very entertaining.
Can get best out of Brian Hoyer. Need brains. Hoyer blows. I don't care. So I find that, again, it's these kind of things that are like petty little shots also at Brady going out the door. Like, Okay, I can understand. Like, you're the most accomplished coach of all time, Bill. But, like, you can't truly believe that. And if you do, you're delusional.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. Like, when you're talking about those quarterbacks, so Rodgers is obviously in a different level. But what did Andy Dalton sign for? Like, I know they have no cap space, but you could maneuver that. Like, when I look at Andy Dalton, that's just like insurance in case – you get in a situation where Stidham's not what you think he's going to be. And to your point, Hoyer's not a long-term – and when I say long-term, I sort of mean, you know, even though this is an oxymoron, I mean long-term, short-term. In other words, long-term for the 2020 season, the entirety of the 2020 season. He's not – you know, you can play him for 4 games or 5 games, but you know you can't go through 16 and win with him, so you have another option there. And so it's just odd to me. It's like, do they really think – like, what is the bar in their mind for the caliber of quarterback they need to have success? And it seems like, again, they feel like it's really low. And this ties back to what I was told with the whole Josh and Brady thing, that there's a feeling that Josh kind of thinks it's about Josh, and Josh and Bill think it's their system is plug and play and that they can make it happen. I think there's some historical evidence of that, you know, going back to the way Josh did things in Denver with Kyle Orton after – after I almost said McDaniels, after Cutler was out of there and after he tried to trade for Matt Castle and was rebuffed by Bill, who sent Castle to Kansas City, that whole quarterback thing really fell apart. And it was sort of like, oh, okay, well, we don't need Jay Cutler. I don't have to make up with Jay Cutler. I'll just be fine with Kyle Orton. And like, look, Orton played pretty well. Like, I mean, I think Josh is a phenomenal coach. He got more out of Orton than I thought was possible. But I also don't think you can... if you're going to lower the bar that way quarterback-wise, then I feel like you have to admit that you're also lowering the bar in terms of your expectations as a franchise. Like, it's like, okay, if you feel that way, that means you no longer plan to compete for championships.
CB and Wister on this thing that we're discussing here with Brady, McDaniels, the Patriots. You're next here on Gasper Murray. Hello.
Yeah, so basically, I'm not understanding at all where Josh or Bill get that thinking that they can do all this without Brady. Because I know Felder shot it down the other day, saying, oh, that's just Cleveland, but Cleveland was good before Bill. They made the playoffs 5 out of 6 years, 1 out of 5 years with him. And then Brady leaving, maybe to, you know, it's written, Fox Sports has it, there's a reporter's name to it. They said when San Fran called about Garoppolo, Belichick offered Brady, and then Kraft shot it down. So and they basically said Brady's been trying to get out of there ever since then, and once he finally got the chance, he bolted. So I as you can see, I'm highly with you guys on this. And I think it's even a bigger point to where Belichick is thinking he's minimizing the players, where I'm going to take a lot of money. I don't want to pay anybody anything because it's all my system. And once again, that's like, you know, to all of our older viewers, listeners, no disrespect, but that's like letting your 68-year-old grandmother run all the family cookouts. I just don't get it.
I mean, they do pay people. I mean, look, Stephon Gilmore gets paid, but I think that they have a lot of belief and in sort of the system. And in a lot of positions, I think you can get away with it. I mean, we've seen that. You know, the system obviously does work. But the one position that I would argue that it's a lot harder to do that is quarterback. And I would argue the system has worked in the past because you've had that type of quarterback. I'm not sure that system, when I say the system, I mean the system of replacing players, guys being disposable. This guy's out, maybe a lesser guy's in and we coach him up. That works because overall you had a quarterback that could make it work and who would allow you on offense to get by with lesser talent. But as that quarterback gets older and he's less capable of doing that, if you don't surround him with the pieces, then the system doesn't work the same way. And I think we saw that last year.
Yeah, I tell you what, though, you can forget about, you know, thoughts of Deshaun Watson breaking free and being here, or Aaron Rodgers as that thing continues to go sour in Green Bay. Like, just reading this column, I think that there is a sense of not accomplishment, but maybe comfort going forward, at least these next few years for Bill. And it's like, oh, no, we got quarterback on the cheap. I'm not going to be spending any kind of money on any of those big name guys.
I mean, that can be a real advantage in team building, and it's one they haven't had. If you can get a young quarterback who's on his rookie deal, it gives you — that's what we saw with the Rams with Jared Goff before they gave him that terrible deal. Yeah. You know, as I call him, Presbyterian Garoppolo. you know, they gave him that awful deal. It's helped Mahomes in Kansas City, and it's going to be completely different when he's making $40 million a year. There's a huge advantage if you can find that guy. And we'll see with Stidham. If Stidham's my only thing with the Stidham thing, we've talked about this a lot, is I just sort of feel like they want to have it both ways. They want to anoint the guy tacitly by not bringing in any real competition, but then they don't want any of the pressure of being anointed to be on him. So it's like he gets the job by default, but no one can sort of, every time there's some sort of expectation attached, it's like, well, you know, we'll see. Who knows? He hasn't proved anything. You know, well, no one's really anointing him. And it's like, well, you kind of are. So if this is your guy and you're going to back him, then don't we have a right to sort of scrutinize him and attach some expectations to that?
Yeah, no, that's fair. And I like that you continue to hammer this kid, too. It's a thorn in your side, and I think it will be.
Oh, don't get me started on Gus Malzahn lying about why he wasn't good the last year. He was there, lost his two best receivers. He had Darius Slayton and Ryan Davis. He didn't lose his two. He lost the Hastings kid, who they brought in, who now the Patriots have signed. That kid was a walk-on kicker who they converted to wide receiver. And then he lost his kid, Eli Stove, who was good, but I mean, he wasn't Ryan Davis or Slayton. The biggest thing was he lost Kerryon Johnson, who was the focus of the offense at Auburn, and suddenly the next year he was the focus of the offense, and it didn't work. Does that mean he's not going to be good in the NFL? Absolutely not. But I mean, the level of excuse making for why he dropped to the fourth round and wasn't as good as last year at Auburn is a little annoying.
I will give you that. I have been somewhat annoyed, especially recently, with the coverage on Jared Stidham, that any of the quotes or anyone you're hearing from, it's guys like Gus Malzahn, ex-coaches, ex-teammates. Of course they're going to give glowing reviews of him. Can we get like a dissenting voice, just maybe one or two? Tell me about a flaw in his game.
Well, you know, the amazing thing is, yeah, exactly. And look, again, Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson, these guys, third, fourth round picks. There's Joe Montana was a third round pick. You can find a franchise quarterback in the third or fourth round. But what I would like to hear and what you're not hearing is sort of like, well, why did he drop to the fourth round in the first place? It's like that's totally forgotten. The rest of the league just, you know, are complete idiots and let the Patriots get him.
Bill did it again.
No, nobody's talking about, well, what were some of the things that people saw on tape that led them to believe he was a fourth rounder in the first place? And have all those things been rectified or proven incorrect? Or was it just simply somebody else's fault? Maybe it was, and I'm wrong. But, I mean, again, I went back and looked it up. Like, Malzahn, at least statistically speaking, he's incorrect. Statistically speaking, he did not lose his top two receivers from the year before. That's not what happened his last year based on statistics. Maybe they were the two guys he was the most comfortable with. Maybe they were the two guys he trusted the most, but they were not the two most productive receivers that he had thrown to from the year before.
Well, we finally know how Aaron Rodgers feels about Jordan Love getting drafted about a month ago by the Green Bay Packers. I want to touch on that next here on Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
I was watching the draft, the feed with A.J. Hawk and Pat McAfee and his boys. And I think, you know, the general reaction at first was surprise. I think like many people, you know, obviously not going to say that I was thrilled by the pick necessarily. But I understand the organization is thinking not only about the present, but about the future. And I respect that. You know, I understand their focus and their mindset. And obviously they thought that he was such a great talent that they needed to go up and get him.
So that's Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. It was on CBSSports.com yesterday. He's finally addressing the fact the Packers took a quarterback in the first round about a month ago, Jordan Love. And he said all the right things, but I don't know. I hear that and some of the other clips coming from this interview, Chris. And I don't know if you've read about it or heard it. At one point he says, like, well, I welcome Jordan to the team, which really means, well, he can play quarterback when they pry the football from my cold, dead hands. I think for the short term, kind of like Garoppolo, how it did to Brady, the drafting of Garoppolo to Brady in 2014, it's going to light a fire under his ass. But also, much like how it did with Brady, there's no shot that Aaron Rodgers retires a Green Bay Packer. I think he's already, you know, resigned himself to the fact that he's going to play somewhere else to end his career. I'd say San Francisco. Like, that would be a good spot for him. Goes back to where, you know, he grew up.
Yep.
Clearly, Garoppolo's not the answer there, so something like that. But I don't know. Overall, I was a little surprised that he handled it the right way because you hear things and how bitchy and petty that Aaron Rodgers can be. He did say everything, I guess, as appropriate as he possibly could on the surface, but underneath, you know, he's got his blood's boiling.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he wasn't pleased with that pick. And it, you know, reminds me, some years back, do you remember, it might have been 1990, do you remember when John Elway was still playing, and they drafted, like, Tommy Maddox.
Yeah, yeah, that was, who the hell was the coach? Dan Reeves. Yeah, he hated Dan Reeves because of that.
Yeah, I mean, that was, and so I'm curious what the Matt LaFleur, because Matt LaFleur's a young coach, he's only in his second year, and I'm not saying it was Matt LaFleur's call, but, you know, what's that relationship, which people already said there was tension with that last year, what's that going to be like? You know, moving forward with Jordan Love. I don't know. I just have a feeling like Aaron Rodgers isn't even going to talk to this kid. Like, he's not even going to acknowledge him.
Nor should he, Tommy Maddox. He had a second career with Pittsburgh in the early 2000s, right?
He did. Right? And yeah. Then didn't he play? Did he play in, like, the original XFL?
Yes, he did. He did.
Okay.
Yeah, because I knew he went to one of those offshoot leagues. I couldn't remember. Was it CFL? But no, you were right. He went to the XFL, the original version, which sucked even worse than this last one. All right, let's try to run through some of your...
Wait, whoa.
Oh, that's right. You liked this
Yeah, the one. Last one. I mean, honestly, if there's any league that should have kept playing during the pandemic, it was the XFL.
Well, consider you're right in that it's the thing is run by the WWE and Vince McMahon, and it's, you know, the show must go on in terms of the wrestling. Why not with the XFL? It is kind of a surprise. It's just probably because it made no money. They had no money, so we're done here.
Yeah, I don't know, man. St. Louis Silverhawks forever. That league was good. I missed that. Houston Roughnecks. I was strangely into that league.
Rick in Plymouth on the crowd, no crowd noise thing that Joe Buck got yelled at on social media about earlier this week. Go ahead, Rick.
How's it going, guys? The only thing I wanted to chime in about it was I'm rather interested to see what baseball's like with no fans, only because I work as an umpire up to the high school and small college level and everything else. And I would like to see how and hear how major league umpires handle managers and players and maybe get some of the sounds of the game that you wouldn't get with the crowd roar and everything else. I mean, I don't know. I'm going to use it as a learning tool. But, I mean, hockey, you have to pipe in the sound. You know, you da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da with the crowd noise and everything else, you score a goal. Because if you got hockey with no crowd noise, you might as well play it at the Warrior Ice Arena. I mean, there's no point in using the gun.
Yeah. Yeah, Rick, on that, I'm going to let you go. Like, you know, we've been conditioned to have that kind of, to hear and get up for that kind of response, right? Whether they score a touchdown, a goal, whatever, you know, whatever sport we're talking about. Someone hits a home run, you're expecting to hear that. I think that football in the NBA need it more than anything else. And in terms of what you'd be able to hear from umpires, players maybe talking crap against each other, like, I can't imagine, especially in the NBA, that any of these guys would allow themselves to get mic'd up. I mean, if some of the microphones, parabolic mics, yeah, actually pick it up. Those are the ones that look like, you know, like a big satellite dish. Thank you. If some of that picks it up, then fine. And that'd be kind of interesting, but I don't know. Like, you could really get guys in trouble. Like, think about that. You know, guys that have extramarital affairs or anything like that. Someone talking crap about.
Oh, I love it.
You know, bring like, it it'd be very interesting. But if I'm a player, I wouldn't allow that. I would. Well,
but then we would know. We would like really know. And of course, as I'm bringing this up, I immediately draw a blank. But we would really know if what's his face, Mason Rudolph, really. Hey, Mason Rudolph really drop the N-word on Myles Garrett? Like, what's up with that? Like, you would know. You would know. Like, what's up? What's happening on the field?
But everything would have to be on a delay, too, because if anything like that got through, you know, you're talking about FCC fines, all the networks would be out of their minds about it. I just, for that, it's one of the many reasons. I want the fake crowd noise. I do. Lie to me. Just make it like how it's supposed to be. It's like how
I want to hear what I normally would not be able to hear with the fans there. I want to hear, like, the real NFL, like, what's going on in the field and just, you know, everything. I want to hear, like, what it's really like.
Tara in Bedford on Tom Brady. Hey, Tara.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi. First of all, Jim, I want to say that you're my spirit animal when it comes to this pandemic. Like, you and I are on the same page. Like, the world is going to hell with four-legged but robots. Secondly, I've been thinking a lot about why Tom, where the relationship went bad, and I think it actually goes back to Deflategate, because first of all, you've got Bill throwing him under the bus, and then you've got Kraft basically admitting that they did something wrong, having that fine and whatever else he did. And I think since then, you can look and see, you know, Tom was a very happy boy.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Tara. Do you think that that's where it began? You know that he's upset where it was, you know, for months, at least in terms of ownership, Robert Kraft is like, we're going to fight this. It sounded like he was going to be the new Al Davis, who always had a beef with the NFL. And then all of a sudden, he capitulated and it was over. If I'm Tom Brady, I'm a little bit pissed there.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was some disappointment and resentment there. There's no question about that. But I don't think that that was the driving force. I don't. I think it sort of was something that evolved over the years, the lack of commitment in terms of wanting to do a long-term deal and being committed to what Tom's committed to, which is playing until 45 and having Garoppolo breathing down his neck and just sort of getting the sense. I think it was more related to Bill and getting the sense that, Bill was ready to move on maybe sooner than Tom was.
Yeah, I still think it's how the Super Bowl played out, the loss to the Eagles.
That definitely had a part in it.
Coming off an MVP season, Butler gets benched. Like, he doesn't like the game plan.
Yeah.
They never really get any, collectively, the team doesn't get an answer as to why Butler is benched. They know why, but we're like, there's no, hey, sorry guys, I botched this one from Bill, which you're never going to get. But then after that, MVP season, they go into that offseason, and that contract they put in front of him, that incentive-laden, insulting contract, that to me was like, oh, the writing's on the wall. Like, I'm basically done here. And this is what I have to deal with now.
Yeah.
This is the contract you're going to put in front of me. Go F yourselves.
Well, go back to the Wickersham story, but that whole 17 season, all the stuff with Alex Guerrero, and I always bring this up, Brady and Tom versus time, having to get the rub down in his suite next to the Sterno cans and the chafing dishes. It's like,
and you think that was purposely put in there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And I just think, that whole sort of setup and all that strife that year, I think that really, there was a lot going on that year. I mean, it dates back, I think, before that to 16, but I think that there was a whole lot going on. And I know, Tom was definitely on a mission after he sat out those first four games of the 2016 season. And I think there definitely was some concern there about if Garoppolo had stayed healthy. Belichick was very much looking forward to those four games with Garoppolo. Now, it ended up being a game and a quarter and a half, but I think he was looking forward to those four games and what was going to happen and what he could do with the kid.
And that's because Garoppolo is made out of wheat crackers. Steve in New Hampshire, and the fact that he was at his worst at the worst possible time of the biggest game of his life. He ain't that good. Steve in New Hampshire, you're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Murray, you kind of just touched on my point that if they don't pump in the crowd noise, are they going to have every one of these games on a delay so they can cut everything out? We're not going to be able to hear what's going on, and we need a whole segment of Coachenstein.
Oh.
There you go, Coachenstein.
Yes, Coachenstein, Belichick, Halas, Lombardi, Parcells. Yeah, a little bit of a bad coach thrown in there too, like a Pete Carroll, chewing the gum,
pumped and jacked. Coachenstein.
I would. The networks would absolutely. I mean, they have them on delay anyway, but it would be like a longer delay. And think of how annoying that would be, especially if they're not pumping in the crowd noise. So it's like quarterback calling out the cadence. Someone drops an F-bomb because they jump off sides, and it's like, you just get that silence, that awkward silence for 5 to 10 seconds. Nah, I don't want that. That'd be crap. Put in the fake crowd noise. Danny in Bellingham on that very thing. Go ahead.
I'm wondering if noise goes. When I was younger, me and my brother, we always used to play the old EA sports games, and we used to actually turn the crowd noise down so that you can hear all the stuff on the field. So I'm with you on that sense. I want to hear what it sounds like. But does eliminating the crowd, whether they pump in noise or not, does that kind of make it, except for maybe baseball where the fields have different dimensions, are these all going to be like neutral site games? Are you going to lose that? The crowd getting behind you and rallying the team, or possibly influencing the umpire or the referee's decision, or a Jared Goff's going to be able to hear everything his coach says now? Is he going to play differently? I'm wondering how that's going to affect things as far as what it added to the game and home field or home court advantage and all that.
Oh, Danny, I think in the worst possible way, and that's why an a-hole will be ready to put an asterisk on any championship kind of team that doesn't deserve it wins it.
Oh, God, here we go.
Oh, but Chris, I mean, so it completely, especially in certain sports, the NBA, the NFL specifically, places that have real home field or home court advantages.
Yeah.
You're out in Oakland with Golden State, Kansas City with the Chiefs, and Arrowhead, whatever the hell they call that place in Seattle where the Seahawks play.
Quest
Field, or is it whatever? CenturyLink. Thank you.
Whatever it is.
If there's no fans there, it's moot. You're basically playing neutral site games with no fans. And I'm sorry, if you have a jittery idiot out there like Jared Goff, who all of a sudden isn't looking confused because he can hear clear as day his daddy, Sean McVay, calling in the audible or whatever play into his helmet, Yeah, that affects it. And if that team were to win a championship, fake, big asterisk all over it. Same with the Celtics, too. No disrespect, but if the Celtics, healthy, come back, Kemba Walker's fine, and they don't have to go to Toronto, but they beat the Raptors in, you know, Orlando at Disneyland, fake, asterisk. I'm sorry, it's fake.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I'm just going to disagree for this reason. We've had these seasons in the past. Like, you know, who won the Super Bowl in 1982? 1982 season. Hail to the
Chiefs. Redskins. Oh, Redskins. Sorry. Yeah.
That's right. Chiefs. So it's like, you know, but I don't hear a lot of people say, so that was a 9-game regular season.
Yeah.
There were 16 teams allowed in the playoffs. It was the MVP of the league that year, Mark Mosley, a place kicker. And I wrote this on WCVB.com. I'm like, that's like a golf cart taking the checkered flag at the Indianapolis 500. Okay. But nobody looks back on that as like, oh, that doesn't count. Like, you know, 1981 baseball season. The teams didn't all even play the same number of games. You had a first half champion and a second half champion. Go back and look this up. In the National League West, the Cincinnati Reds for the totality of the season were 4 games better than any other team. They didn't make the playoffs because the first half champion, I think, was the Dodgers and the second half champion was the Astros. The Dodgers went on to win the World Series. Nobody's like, oh, asterisk to that. Like, after a number of years, we're just going to forget about it and it's going to be whoever won.
Stupid country and it's short memories. You're right. Two people have, oh no, that was fine. It's a real championship. It won't be to me.
I know you. I do have to say this, but the no crowd noise, I am predicting like an MVP finish of like Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff. I don't know who would be the third person. Like all the most sensitive, crack under pressure quarterbacks are light it up this year.
Oh no, it'll be all the softest athletes.
Jimmy Garoppolo, yeah. Third.
Yeah, Bruins win the cup because Tuukka Rask is like out of his, you know, plays the best he ever did, and he's great in a game 7. Yeah, because there's no pressure on, because there's no fans in the place. It's not real. I'm sorry, it's not. I'll take it. Whatever you put in front of me, put any kind of live sports in front of me, even German soccer, like we've had here on the TVs all day. I'll take it, but it won't be real. Asterisk, ready to go. All right, calls lined up. We'll try to run through some of those. I also want to get Chris your latest thoughts on The Last Dance. Did you catch up with episodes?
I'm totally caught up.
7 and 8, good. Because I have turned on that documentary after the last 2 episodes.
Oh, really?
Yep. We'll get to that next here on Gasper
Stranger
and Murray.
Things style.
Gasper and Murray. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's one of those incidents where, you know, I wish it never happened, but if I had a chance to do it over again, I probably wouldn't change it.
All right, Chris, I want to get your latest thoughts on The Last Dance, the last couple of episodes, 7 and 8, right? Yes, because the last two are going to be airing tomorrow night. I've turned on this. I've loved it up until the last couple of episodes, but last Sunday it was like a tipping point moment for me. Like now I feel like it's too long, it's too overblown, it's totally a puff piece. It's not going to paint Michael Jordan in any kind of bad light. Not that I thought it was going to anyway, but he did say going into it, oh, you might think less of me, or you know, I'm paraphrasing, but he felt like the narrative might have changed about how people feel about him. Not really. They didn't really do any kind of a deep dive into the gambling. You know, it's unfortunate how his dad passed, but I didn't really appreciate personally the tisking and the, oh, how dare anyone question that there might have been any kind of connections to the gambling and his dad's murder. Like, hey, come on. I mean, the whole thing was sketchy and weird, and the tisking that went on from his, what I looked at as a suspension, I think a lot of people think was a wink-wink, nudge-nudge suspension by the NBA at that time. Like, how dare you think that? No, he just wanted to play baseball. He was wanted to get out of the spotlight. You had the author of Rare Air, the book that the guy that he did with Michael Jordan, saying, well, I knew in 92 when he was at the Olympics, like, he was going to be calling it a career. He was done with this. And if it wasn't for the Olympics and he wanted to get past Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and win 3 titles, like, he would have already retired. Like, oh, please. that drove me all crazy. So it's a puff piece. It's too long. I think it paints Scottie Pippen in a terrible light. Oh, you just heard him there saying that he wouldn't change things, where he sits his ass on the bench like a baby because he wasn't going to take the last shot And what series was that? That was,
it was against the Knicks in 94.
Knicks in 94. Tony Kukoc ends up hitting the game-winning shot. He looks like a terrible teammate. He's got teammates after the game crying in the locker room, calling him out, and rightfully so. And he says he wouldn't change things. Oh, I don't know. I just lost it for it. And I'm already pot committed, so I'll watch these last couple of episodes tomorrow night. Yes, I will. I'm not going to. I put this much commitment into the damn thing. Fine, I'll watch the last two. But I just think it's been overblown now. It's too many episodes. The way that, you know, I get it. Terry Francona was his manager there with the Double-A team that he was with the Chicago
White Sox. Oh, you know, he would have made the major leagues, you know.
Oh, that narrative, too. And now we're, like, hitting 200 is some kind of accomplishment. Like, what are we doing? I came away from those last two episodes. And it wasn't just me, because it's on too late. My wife goes to bed pretty early. She watched it the next morning. I walked in. She had a look of disgust on her face because she's been into it, same as me. And I was like, what do you think? She's like, I'm over it. Like, these are boring now. And they are.
And your wife has excellent taste in television, I would say.
So, I don't know. You watch them. You still all in? You feel like this thing?
I'm going to finish it, but I still have the same frustration that I had before. It's like, again, you know, the whole thing about, like, he was really hard on the teammates and he's crying and all that. And it's like, I can't think of one thing he said, like, oh, I was wrong or I could have done it a little bit differently. So it basically was like, you know, look, I was going to pull you along whether you liked it or not. And if you didn't like it, you could get out. But then he's like sort of crying and, you know, like taking a break, like, oh, you know, it hurt me to have to treat people that way. Feel bad for me. Why don't you just say, like, you know what? I did what I had to do. But you know what? There were probably times I could have let up off the gas a little bit. And looking back, I wish maybe I'd done that a little bit from time to time. But I was just so focused. How hard is that to say? There's not one thing he has said in this thing that says, I did this wrong or I should have done something differently. And that's the part that kind of bothers me. The baseball thing, I didn't mind the 200 thing as much. I mean, you know, I sort of understood, like, you haven't played baseball in years. It was interesting to me that they put him in Double-A just based on the media. That shows you how seriously they took him as a player, like his development, that they just put him in Double-A because it had the media capacity. But then it was like, oh, you know, he could have made it to the major. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that part I found was like, what are we doing? And we're now, this is like some kind of accomplishment. And even like some, and I, you know, there's so many people that are like Michael Jordan freaks, and I get it. He's the greatest basketball player who ever lived. And it's, and I still get, you know, this sounds corny, but it's true. Sometimes they'll show some of the highlights in some of those games that I remember watching, and I was into that team and into him. I get tingling watching, like the hair goes up in my arms, like watching some of the highlights.
Oh, me too.
But you still have, like, you know, even pro baseball players, like, after that aired, like, boy, I didn't hit 200 in Double-A. Like, oh, please, like, this is, like, now a thing. Like, Jordan hitting 200, he could have made the majors. Please, stop it.
But, you know, and I would say this, you know, I think it's been very well done. The level of detail, I know some people don't like the sort of back and forth of the time thing, but I think it's cool that they turn it not into the last season, but really his whole career. I've enjoyed that part, sort of the career retrospective part of it. And I would also say this, like, regardless of what you sort of think of it overall, you have to realize the time and effort put into this was immense. And also, the only way this thing could be released was with Michael Jordan's blessing.
Right.
So, of course, it's going to have, like, a pro Michael Jordan slant to it, because that's the only way any of this would ever see the light of day. So the people making this documentary, they're sort of handcuffed. And in a way, I give them credit for even attempting to address some of these issues, like the gambling, like the, you know, Michael Jordan's father's death and if it was tied to. And I'll be honest, I thought the interview they did with Stern was pretty good, because I thought Stern gave you a little, like, wink, wink, like, oh, yeah, no suspension, yeah. Wink, wink. Like, I thought they asked him twice. And the first time he's like, oh, that's ridiculous. And then they ask him again. You can hear the question asked, so you didn't suspend Michael Jordan? And he, like, looks in the camera, he's like, no. Yeah. Like, it's like, and I was like, oh, you totally suspended him. So, you know, I think there might be some ways that they're getting some stuff in there.
Yeah, and just from the nostalgia aspect, I mentioned last week how this thing has reminded me how much I hated those 90s Knicks teams.
Oh, they ruined basketball. Assassinated the game so bad.
It's reminded me how much I hated some of the uniforms of those teams from that era. Those Jazz uniforms in the 90s. Awful.
Yeah, those were bad.
90s New Jersey Nets uniforms.
How about the Sonics uniforms?
Oh, those I didn't mind.
Oh,
I
those actually, stink.
Like, I like the old ones, but those ones when they redid them in the mid-90s.
The red and the forest green. I mean, how those look bad.
Those weren't too bad.
Those are like, oh, they're completely dingy. Oh. Like, they should have just put them in flannels.
You just reminded me about that finals, too.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, one of the greatest teams of all time. To me, it's like that 96 team and the 86 Celtics. Like, coin flip. So they're up 3-0 in that series.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the narrative was in that it's like, well, you know, Michael was going through a difficult time because his dad was gone and, you know, people didn't know what he was going through. So that's why they dropped two straight games. It wasn't so much that Gary Payton was now defending Michael Jordan in those games and George Karl switched things up. No, it was nobody really knows what Michael was going through. but they won the championship on Father's Day. So wouldn't that actually be the most difficult day for him? Like, that narrative, too, to me, yeah, was like, I get it. Losing a loved one, especially a parent, prematurely in the way that he did, awful, 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 awful. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. But that, to me, was also played up a little bit, because if you're dealing with that and that was difficult, and then you accomplished to winning the championship on Father's Day, like, that was like, all right, what are you trying to sell me here?
So
the Gary Payton thing, though, I thought was
that
funny.
Was awesome.
Yeah,
come on, you gotta admit that was good. Like, the way he just laughed at that, you know, and he's like, oh, I never had any problems with the glove. I thought that was pretty cool. I'm really curious, because there are some rumors and, like, you know, NBA backstories and conjecture that the quote unquote flu game wasn't really the flu.
Right, that he was hammered, like, the night before.
That he went to some casino in Vegas and, like, didn't get enough sleep and got, you know, hammered or whatever. Or so, there's also maybe a story that he got food poisoning or, like, whatever it is. So I'm wondering if they're going to delve into – I assume if it's gambling, they're not going to delve into it. But if it's maybe a food poisoning thing, maybe they will. I don't know.
And just think of how annoying that narrative would be today if that game were to be played out that way. Michael Jordan was playing with the flu. How dare he? How selfish? Why don't you think of others? Why weren't you wearing a mask? Why would you even put him out there, Phil Jackson? Do you hate society? Do you hate the frontline workers? Oh, what's wrong with you? Oh, God.
Can I tell you this? I do want to know, like, on The Last Dance, are they going to address, in all seriousness, from a basketball standpoint, are they going to address the biggest sort of, I don't want to say question or issue I have with that shot, which is that it is...
Oh, it's a push-off.
It's the greatest offensive foul in the history of the NBA. Right. I mean, it was clearly an offensive foul. Are they going to address that? Or is it going to be some BS with Jordan saying, well, you know, I caught Byron Russell just leaning the wrong way, and I just tapped him and, you know, created space. Or is he going to admit that it was an offensive foul?
No, of course not. He won't admit anything. There's no wrongdoing for Michael Jordan in this thing whatsoever.
Also, you know the other thing that struck me? And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. It does strike me, like, where's his ex-wife in this thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, she probably doesn't want to talk. Maybe she signed a non-disclosure agreement or something like that.
But, I mean, because she was around, you know, when he was dealing with losing his dad, and just, so she could lend a lot of perspective to what it was like, and it's just interesting to me that she's not in it at all.
Yeah. I'd put the new wife on camera. You seen her?
I have.
Whew, that's an upgrade. Sean in the car on the crowd, no crowd thing.
You're going to get in trouble when you get home.
No, she admits
it. Hey, how's it going, guys?
Go ahead. Yeah, hi, Sean. Hi.
Yeah, so what I think the league should do is, it might actually help with the viewer experience, is maybe focus more on virtual reality. Get some of these headsets you can put, like...
And, I don't want to deal with that.
I liked where that was going.
And his phone sucked anyway.
Oh, don't Felger him with the phone thing.
Virtual reality.
That phone was 5 times better than any phone call Burt Beer has ever made to this station.
Speaking of Jordan. Maybe it's Jordan calling in here. He doesn't like what we have to say. Jordan in Florida on Mike Evans. Go ahead.
Hey, what are you guys' thoughts on Mike Evans as a receiver? I think on the field, he could be the best receiver in the league. He has great stats despite not having great quarterbacks. And off the field, he's no drama. He's not like one of these diva receivers. And I think he and Tom Brady are going to be on the same page and have great chemistry. What do you guys think?
Jordan, I think he's a stud. I don't base that on any kind of fantasy football things. I don't play it just from watching highlights. Having watched him at A&M, he meant more to that offense than Johnny Manziel actually ever did. The dude's a beast.
Yeah, he's sick.
Yeah.
He's really good. You know, my one thing with him would be, though, you know, he wins a lot, I think, on physicality.
Doesn't like going over the middle or anything like that,
yeah,
though.
And I think, yeah, he wins on physicality, like, sort of down the sidelines. Also, I'm not sure he's the most precise route runner in the world, which that's something that, you know, Tom definitely values precise routes. Now, look, he doesn't have to be. You just throw it up to the guy. He goes and gets it.
Right. So if you're looking for, like, maybe a flash here and there of the old Brady to Moss thing, you might be able to get that with Brady definitely. To Mike Evans.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
So that'll be fun. But no, I think he's a beast.
I just want to know, like, who's the slot receiver going to be down there? Are they going to make, like, Cam Brady or O.J. Howard, or is Godwin going to be that guy?
Doesn't he usually go over the middle in that offense, or had?
I don't know where he was lining up. You know, like, maybe he goes over the middle, but is he their slot guy?
I think he has been at times, but I don't know. I mean,
you would know. I'm sure you watch far more Bucks games than I did. I mean,
well, I'm Tampa Bay all the way now, baby. We have one segment to go. 5 questions for Chris Gasperga. Nothing to do with sports. We'll wrap up with that next here on Gasper and Murray.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I got 5 questions for Chris Gasper of Channel 5. I got 5 questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got 5 questions.
5, 1, 2, 3, 4.
I got 5 questions. I hope they say
wrap up the show each and every week. Five questions. Chris Gasper got nothing to do with sports, so let's dive right in, shall we, Chris? Now that the weather seems to be taking a turn for the best, finally getting some consistent warm weather in the 70s, have you been barbecuing at all? You been outside? You done any grilling?
I have not. You know, I don't live in a, I live in a condominium, so I don't really have the ability to do that. There are some people that actually grill out in our little parking lot. I've seen them doing that, though.
How about a picnic, then? Ladies love a picnic.
They do. No, we haven't done that yet. Can you do that now? Does that have to be socially distanced?
I mean, you can. It's just whether or not, you know, your neighbors might rat on you. Like, I saw them outside on a blanket not wearing the masks. They had a picnic basket. And there
Is
was
it
a
okay
bear
to
with
pull
honey.
Down, pull down the masks and put the food in my mouth?
Yeah. Oh, jeez, that's right. No, I'm sure you can, but some nudnik will probably be all up in your business. Like, I saw the guy from Channel 5 and his hot wife out having a picnic. How dare they? Not wearing masks. Oh, shut up. Mind your own business. That's all you can ask of the people. Mind your own effing business. Question number two, Chris. Do you feel bad for influencers affected by the pandemic? Apparently, a lot of the influencers, your Instagram ass models and what have you, you know, they're not getting the clicks and the likes that they once did. They're not getting...
They should be getting more of them. There's nothing else to do.
Well, they're not influencing because they're not able to drum up business. Like, here I am, try this protein powder. Or here I am, buy one of these stupid bikinis. Do you feel bad for the influencers?
You know, I'm a sensitive person, so I do feel bad for the influencers. I know that you don't, though.
I don't, because that's not a real job. and it's part of me that wishes I had. You know, I don't want kids. I never would have them. It's one of the reasons that the wife and I worked, because I said date two. Like, I'm not having kids. I don't want them in my life. But there are things I would like children, just so I could yell at them for certain things. Like, I can't imagine the hell of having like an eighth or ninth grader right now, and it's like, what do you want to be? I want to be an influencer. Oh, really? Okay, you're punished for the rest of the year, because you're going to get a real job, because influencing on Instagram or social media, it's not a real job. I don't care how much money any of these idiots could make. It's not a real job, so get a real job. I don't feel bad for them at all. Wah. Question number three.
I knew that was how that was going to go.
Yeah, I mean, some of these, if you haven't figured out, are just to set me up.
Oh, completely. This is really five questions with Jim Murray.
But no, Chris, how fast do you think you've ever gone in a car, either while you were driving or someone else was driving? I know you have a fancy car, much like I do. Mm-hmm. How fast you got in that thing?
In that car? 130.
Ooh, all right. Yeah, my man. Yeah, I've been around there, too. And I'll tell you, it was one of the, not a lot of silver linings, not a lot of good in this, but the beginning of the pandemic, oh, it was a speeder's paradise.
Now they're cracking down.
Oh, yeah, now they're all over
big
the place.
Time.
Ugh. And I get it. You know, you got a job to do. I'm not going to get on the cops for it. But, man, those first few weeks, like, there was one day I got here in 9 minutes. I'm like, yeah. Like, oh, it's great. First post-pandemic night out, where are you and the wife going?
Oh, that is a great question. Where would we go?
Right, she's just clamoring for a dinner. You're like, I got to get to Bloomingdale's.
Yeah, like, I have to be honest. I know. I'm kind of like, I actually said to my wife this morning before I left, I just looked at her and I was like, I miss shopping. I don't know. But I probably would say, like, you know, to the Prudential and, yeah, do the shopping and we can just grab dinner there. Maybe we'll grab, not that it's a bad restaurant, but, you know, not that it's like the greatest restaurant, but, you know, now I'm drawing a blank. What's the restaurant there?
Well, they get Eataly there. You can
no,
kill
the
two...
roof with the rooftop. I know where we would go.
Earl's.
But you know where we would go? Because she likes this one. Porto.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
which is right there. So I could do my shopping and then we could go to Porto and sit outside.
Yeah,
Porto's really good.
That's a Gasper special right there. And finally, what's the coolest fact that you love to share? In other words, you know, like,
I don't know.
Well, ladybug spots don't indicate their age. Or, here's my favorite, Rump Shaker. All I want to do is zoom, zoom. Rump Shaker by Rex and Effect. The production actually was made by a teenage Pharrell Williams. So, like, that's one that
I
always,
didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. And still gets paid to this very day anytime that song is played, as if he needs that kind of money. But no cool facts from you?
I'm sure I could think of one, but I can't think of one off the top of my head. Yeah, I don't have any cool, like, musical facts like that. Or
none from fashion, the world of fashion? How no. Dolce and Gabbana met, you know, like something.
No.
All right. I don't have anything. Surprised a guy as well learned as you doesn't have a cool little fact or nugget to share.
No, I'm boring. I'm simple.
All right. That will do it for us. That will conclude this weekend's Gasper and Murray. I will tell you now, next week it will be Gasper and Arcan because, well, where are you going, Jim? Nowhere. It's Memorial Day weekend, and I'm going to try to enjoy Memorial Day weekend. So suck it. So I won't be here, but I'll be here Monday with Felger and Mass.
I hope. That will do it for us. I want to thank Brian Robb producing today's show. Of course, Chris, check him out, WCVB Channel 5. I'll also read him at Channel 5's website as well. Coming up next, we're going to be replaying the Bruins Flyers Winter Classic from Fenway Park from 2010, a game I attended and then basically got hypothermia at and was sick for a month. So enjoy that. Coming up next here on 98.5 Sports Hub. Bye.
From the Town Fair Tire Studio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.